Hello, my name is Barry Newman. What's your name? And has your name got any significance? I mean, honestly, I looked up Barry some time ago, years ago, to find out what it meant. I was so unimpressed, I have no idea today what Barry means. But maybe your name does have something special. I did come across just recently two people down in Victoria, and they called their firstborn son Anzac. He wasn't going to be an Anzac, of course. The father hadn't been involved with any Anzacs. It was purely because they wanted to honour those New Zealanders and Australians who had fought alongside one another in World War I. By the way, it wasn't genuinely liked by the returned services people. They didn't think anybody should be called Anzac. I've got a sister-in-law called Noelle. Now, you could guess this one. She was called Noelle because she was born on Christmas Day. So sometimes people have names because of something special about them, or some association with something that was happening at the same time, or maybe just because they want something to be out there in front and they name their kid that way. I suspect we don't do that normally in Australia these days, probably haven't done for many years. Every now and again a name is special, but we generally choose names because, oh, the person likes it. They think that'll go well with the surname and so on. Now, in the Old Testament, every now and again, and in the New Testament as well, you come across a name, and the name is meant to be special. You're meant to think about it. You're meant to ponder upon what does it mean. Now, here are two beauties. Shir Jashub, I'm not sure how you actually pronounce it, and it means something like a remnant will return. A small group of people will either return or they'll repent or both. I suspect the writer, with respect to that particular person, wanted it to be seen both. A small group of people will actually turn to God and they will be delivered. They'll be rescued. That's wonderful. What about the next one? Maher Shalal Hashbaz. Whew. You know, quick to the plunder, swift to the spoil. Now, at least the first one is one of the prophet Isaiah's son. The second one may be. Imagine, by the way, if you were in a class and you had that one of those names and you were new to the teacher and the teacher said, excuse me, what's your name? And you spell it out, oh, Maher Shalal Hashbaz, and probably everyone starts laughing. But it actually meant something. I don't want to go into it, but it actually did mean something. There was a reason why these people had these names, and people had to know that they had these names, that these were special names. This time of the year, getting close to Christmas, one of the names that really stands out is the name Jesus. It's a special name. It actually means something. We're supposed to know what it means. We're supposed to take notice of what it means. Now, here's its historical setting. An angel said to Joseph, who was engaged to Mary, "Don't you hesitate about taking Mary to become your wife. She'll conceive, bear a son, and she will name him Jesus." And then the writer who records this, Matthew, gives us a reason why he'll get that particular name. The name Jesus is special. It's got to mean something. It's there for a certain reason. And he spells it out and says, because he will save his people from their sins. Now, the word Jesus doesn't mean all that, you know, because he will save his people from his sins. What's going on here? What is so special about Jesus and his name? Well, if you were looking at the actual Greek, we've got an English translation when we talk about Jesus. If we're looking at the Greek, you'd say something like, oh, Jesus. You can see how close it is, Jesus and Jesus. But Jesus in the Greek is actually a Greek translation of a Hebrew term, Yeshua. And Yeshua does sound very close to Joshua. It's a shortened form of Joshua, in fact. And Joshua, the word Joshua means Yahweh saves. Now, I don't know whether you thought about it, but when you think about Jesus and Christmas time, try to think about the meaning behind the word Jesus. Yahweh, that special name of God, by the way, it's actually a no name. You can't get a name and get hold of God, as it were. He's not going to be controlled by anybody using a name. It's a sort of a no-name, but it has reverberations of I am, I shall be, I am in control, I know. It's that sort of stuff behind it. Well, this Yahweh, this God, he's known because he rescues people. Now, you may not like the word save. You might say, oh, gosh, that's a very religious word. You know, it just puts you off when you hear, are you saved? No, I'm not saved. Yes, I am saved. Or use another word if you want to. Do you want to be rescued? Well, Jesus is the rescuer. Do you want to be delivered from what we need to be delivered from? Ah, now we're starting to think even more. What do we need to be saved from? And there it was explained by Matthew, because he will save his people from their sins. Now, maybe that's not a pleasant thing to think about at Christmas time, but we are people who have fallen short of what God wants us to be. We have failed to treat him as God. We live independently as though we were God. God is not slow to criticize such poor behavior, or he will, as it were, he will do something about it in the end. There will be a judgment, and God will be the judge, and our offenses before God will be dealt with. And perfect purity, perfect righteousness is what God demands. Impossible. That's why we need Jesus, the one who saves. God saves through him. Well, let's look at another term, another word, another name, and in fact, the name that's given to Jesus. Emmanuel. Oh, by the way, have you ever heard anyone actually refer to Jesus as, oh, Emmanuel? Well, it certainly doesn't occur in the New Testament. So here is a name that actually is applied to Jesus, and we're going to look at it a bit more detail in a moment, but here is a name which applies to Jesus, but it's a name by which he's never actually addressed. No one says, oh, good day, Emmanuel, or Emmanuel, please teach us, or Emmanuel, what are you going to do next? Or Emmanuel, that was a magnificent thing you did when you turned that man who was dumb into a person who could speak. Oh, Emmanuel. No one ever addresses Jesus as Emmanuel. So here you can see in this ancient world the uses of terms as names which actually aren't labels, but they do tell you something about the person. Now, to get a hold on Emmanuel, we need to do a bit of digging. We need to go back to the Old Testament to start with. We need to go back into a time when there was considerable conflict and fear with the little tiny nation of Judah. Now, let me get my little pointer out here. This purple amount here has to do with the state of Assyria, a very fearsome and a very cruel conquering, bent on conquering country. And that's about the year 745. By the year 701, the Assyrian Empire had spread along the Mediterranean coast there and roughly around here. The time that we're looking at that's of special significance for the word Emmanuel is actually in between. And in between where Samaria, which was the capital of Ephraim or Israel, as it was called, the Syrians to the north, and little old Judah with Jerusalem as its capital, those three were in fear at the point in time where in the Old Testament the name is referred to. They were in fear of the Assyrian Empire, which had grown a bit bigger by that stage. What happened was the Syrians and the Ephraimites, they wanted to do a deal with little old Judah here. Now, Judah was frightened of both them and, of course, Assyria. So what Judah decided under King Ahaz, basically, was to form an alliance with Assyria to protect them from being overrun by the Syrians and cruelly treated. It didn't work out that way. And to protect them from, in fact, the Ephraimites and the Syrians to the north. Okay, that's the backdrop. This is the point. King Ahaz is supposed to take notice of the prophet Isaiah. The prophet Isaiah tells him the truth about things. And the prophet Isaiah says to King Ahaz, you don't want to make an alliance with any of them. You simply trust God and you'll be okay. That's all you got to do. Trust God. That's actually what we all should do. In the big stuff of life, we make mistakes of putting our trust here, there, and everywhere else except God himself. God says, you want to know how to live well in this world and in the world to come? Then you put your trust in me. You have your confidence in me. Well, that, they were the words that in effect of Isaiah to this King Ahaz of Judah. And I'll tell you what, King Ahaz put on a bit of a religious stunt at this point. This is a tendency sometimes with religious people. You can appear to be very pious when in fact you're not very godly at all. So you've got King Ahaz being told how he should behave. Don't make an alliance with anybody. And King Ahaz says, oh dear me. Because Isaiah says to him, I tell you what to do. You just ask God for a sign. Any sign will do. It doesn't matter where it comes from and how big or difficult it is. You ask God for a sign so you can have confidence. You know you can trust him. And this is where King Ahaz becomes very pious. Oh no. Oh, I wouldn't do that. Oh, no. That would be sort of sacrilegious. That would be very improper. I better not do that. Aha, says Isaiah. You won't ask God for a sign? I'll tell you what, you'll get one nonetheless. Here we go. The prophet Isaiah confronts King Ahaz of Judah. And this is the sign that, see, we've got around to Emmanuel. You might have been worrying about this. We've got around to Emmanuel. This is the sign that Isaiah gave to King Ahaz. Behold, that young woman, what young woman? It's a problem. People have a problem. I understand that. Will conceive and bear a son. Who is the son? What son? And she will call his name Emmanuel. Well, that's the Hebrew version. Young woman is correct. That's basically the way you translate that. Well, now, a couple of questions. The young woman, some people say, well, that actually might be the daughter Zion, because she is spoken of like that. Zion is Mount Zion, in which Jerusalem sits. That's the citadel. And the daughter Zion is a way that God will speak about her sometimes, daughter Zion. Maybe that's the reference to the young woman. Other people say, and therefore a son might be those who are faithful to God, the small number who will change their views about God and not seek any alliances with anybody else and trust God alone. Maybe that's it. I've got another suggestion. I really don't know what the answer is. But a further suggestion is that it actually is an actual young woman, presumably one who will have had no knowledge of Isaiah's words. She gets pregnant. She bears a child. And she calls the child Emmanuel. And then Ahaz gets to hear about it. Yes, there is a young woman. Just lately, you know, maybe a year or so down the track, she's had a child. And she called him Emmanuel. Now we've got to ask the question, what would it mean to call the child Emmanuel under these circumstances? Emmanuel means God with us. And if Isaiah's going to tell Ahaz off, and he's going to say, I'll tell you what, you don't ask for a sign, I'll give you a sign. There'll be a young woman and she'll have a child and she'll call him Emmanuel. It's meant to put the fear of whatever into Ahaz. Oh no! God is going to do something powerful, or he's here in very intentionally. He's going to do something. We're in trouble. Now, that's the sort of thing that would be conveyed by that name, Emmanuel, God with us, we're in trouble. Now, Emmanuel is mentioned two other times in the book of Isaiah. It's there in chapter 7 to start with, the one we've just read. And it's Hebrew, as I said, meaning God with us. In the first context is the one we've been looking at, Aram, Syria, and Israel, Ephraim, shall be destroyed by Assyria, and Judah shall be laid waste. Yeah, be feared that God is with us. In chapter 8, verse 8, Assyria, like a mighty river, will overflow and reach up to the neck of Judah. Not completely drown her, but very, very close. She'll be this close to having died. Emmanuel, fear God with us. Don't take that lightly at all. And then in verse 10 of chapter 8, there are just a couple of verses, really, where Emmanuel takes on a slightly different tone. The plans of the peoples of the earth against us, undefined, will fail. Ah, God is with us for good. So now, you go back to that text. All this took place, what the angel of the Lord said to Joseph, to fulfill what was spoken by the Lord through the prophet. Behold, the virgin shall be with child, and shall bring forth a son. They shall call his name Emmanuel. That's just the way the Greek would come up. It's a close quote of the Greek version of Isaiah. And when we hear that this babe called Jesus doesn't have the label, but it belongs to him, the characterization belongs to him, God with us. Well, in a sense, be feared, because if God is with us, better take notice of what he offers us, and he offers us salvation through Jesus. But oh dear, if you're crying out for safety, if you're crying out to be rescued, if you're crying out for the slate to be wiped clean, take heart. This Jesus deserves the title, deserves the statement, God with us for good. God with us for good. Emmanuel. And finally, and fairly quickly, I want to look at four little titles that occur in the book of Isaiah. Oh, says Isaiah, just a little bit later on from chapter 7 and 8. Oh, says Isaiah, unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. And the establishment of his government shall be upon his shoulders. There is to be a king, you see, a future king. And he will be called, and they are astonishing words, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Now just hold on a moment. What's in a name? Now hang on, is this all to do with Jesus? And hang on, it's to do with a child being born. By the way, it doesn't have any fulfillment in the days of Isaiah, nor for centuries to come. It only has some fulfillment of some sort when Jesus comes. And yet you would never describe Jesus as Everlasting Father, would you? You wouldn't describe him as Mighty God, would you? And yet these are the names to be given to the child that is born, and the government shall be upon his shoulders. He shall have his kingdom established and upheld. He shall rule over David's throne and beyond David's throne. And of the days of his peace and the days of his working, there will be no end. Well, that's the text. We've got to ask serious questions about how these names apply. Unto us a child is born, to us a son is given. The government shall be upon his shoulders. His name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will accomplish this. Wow! This can only find fulfillment in Jesus, in some way or another. But how do we do it? In Hebrew literature, not only in Hebrew literature, but in literature belonging to those ancient times, they sometimes did some very cunning things. They would sometimes make a statement that led you out and then follow it with a statement that led you in. Statement that went up this way and a statement that crossed over and went this way. I'm suggesting it's a sort of a crossover statement that in fact has been very carefully constructed. It's like a stepladder. Mighty God and Wonderful Counselor on one side, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace on the other. If you look about it down the bottom, as it were, the bottom rungs of the stepladder, Wonderful Counselor, surely that fits Jesus. What, he's the greatest teacher of all time. We want to understand the truth of ourselves and this world and our relationship with God. Look at the teaching of Jesus, the most extraordinary teacher of all times, the wisest of the wise, Wonderful Counselor, that's Jesus. Prince of Peace, that's got to be Jesus as well. He came to bring peace, and he establishes peace between ourselves and God through his death on the cross. That's Jesus. But above him is the God who has worked through him, the Mighty God, who has brought about through his power this great teacher, this Everlasting Father, the Father who is always a Father to his Son, Jesus, and a Father to all those who call upon Jesus to be their salvation. Yep, yes, this does belong to Jesus, but in a sense it's characterizing a number of things, both himself and his relationship with his Father. What's in a name? a mighty lot, isn't there? Jesus, Emmanuel, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Amen.